Thank you for joining us for Brian's Faculty Spotlight. I'm your host, Sam Simas, the Digital Services and Research Librarian here in the Krupp Library. And during this podcast, I'm going to take you inside the minds of Bryant University's faculty, where we'll talk about their innovative projects, their successes, and the challenges they've met.
Valerie Kerrigan, thank you for joining us today for Bryant's Faculty Spotlight. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much.
We're excited to talk to you, especially about some of the artwork that you're doing and that you've done. Can you talk to us first about your current role at Bryant?
I am a visiting artist and lecturer at Bryant. In the role of visiting artist, I teach classes in drawing, design, and new to me in the fall will be studies in the book. I also was granted a wonderful studio space in what is now called the Art Barn on the outskirts of campus. Throughout my first two semesters, when I found the time, I'd be able to work on my own research and projects, whether it be drawing, painting, or books, but also have some office hours there so students could be introduced to the Art Barn and have a chance to get outside of their normal path of moving around campus. That way, I'm also becoming known to the students as a practicing artist, and they can see me work as we meet for office hours, but also when we started to have some events. I'd bring students and other faculty and staff up to my space in the upstairs of the Art Barn and share with them some of the progress I'm making.
Oh, that's fantastic. Can you tell us a little bit about how the Art Barn is laid out and the kinds of things that you accommodate there?
Yes, so the structure was renovated over the years, but it has a history for a number of different uses. But we now are considering it the Art Barn. So before I even came to campus, there were a lot of faculty members and staff working on really promoting a community art space, because we want to feel that the students at Bryant who do have this need for a creative expression, that they feel they have a home on campus. And so that could be anything from students who work in the visual arts, like drawing or painting. It could be students who work in improvisation and drama, theater, singers. So it's really quite a range of mediums that the students would explore. But this is a place for them to feel accepted and a place where they can have common ground with other students of similar interests. It's really quite an incredible place.
So it sounds like you've been here for a little bit over a year and you're already hitting the ground running and creating this really engaging and nurturing space for creative types on campus. What are some of the most engaging or exciting parts of being at Bryant for you?
The sense of community is really the most important part of being at Bryant. That community is felt for me in working with faculty and staff, and especially students. In the classroom, my daily interaction with students is very important to me and rewarding, but also the relationships I build with them outside of the classroom, whether we're working on an art exhibition together or making plans for different types of shows that we could have on campus. And also discussing their lives and how they want to move forward and how, even though they may not have a major focus in art at the time, how they can continue once they graduate to incorporate artistic ways of living into their own world. I also completed a faculty development series for one of the events. We invited staff into the Art Barn, and I taught them how to make Japanese book structures. And so even developing relationships and community in those ways has been really important to me. And I'm incredibly grateful for the amazing department that I have. And there are 14 of us, and they're not only stellar educators, but also really fantastic and supportive individuals.
And you're part of the English and Cultural Studies department, right?
Yes.
Have you faced any challenges since you've been here? And if you have, what have been some of the hurdles for you?
Well, I would say that I don't know if it's so much of a challenge, but I think my main priority is having the arts become very visual, so to speak, on campus, and really letting faculty, staff, and students know the importance of the arts and how that could really impact their own lives as well as the community at large, how it can really affect people's lives in such a positive way, and also in how creativity can be a part of your livelihood and your career, no matter what it may be. So in teaching problem solving and self-reflection and, you know, creative approaches to different types of tasks, there are ways that can become an important part of not only their lives, but their careers.
Right. I think when people think of creativity, they often think of the creation portion of it and not maybe necessarily the problem solving aspect of creativity and how important that is, especially to students who I think at Bryant particularly are entering into business environments or workplaces or even just within their lives, being able to think in other ways than they normally do. What are some of the things that you think art can do for us? Why is it important that we engage with these things?
Well, I think it opens our senses and it can create empathy, and it allows for us, whether we're making the art or viewing the art, to also see things from another perspective. And that I think is so much needed in the world today. And in seeing things, taking time and paying attention and seeing things through a new lens can really make a difference in one's own life, but also in the larger world.
That ties in directly with the work or the works that you've shared with us, because I think what we've seen across the two artist books or the two projects that you've shown us is a preoccupation with observation and with being present and looking. In the walk, what was the impetus for the project? What is the project? What can you tell us about it?
Thank you. So The Walk is a limited edition artist book that I completed in 2016. So it's an edition of 25. And the book really began as a walk with my daughter. We decided that she wouldn't take the bus for a while and she would walk with me a mile to school. And during that walk, lots of things happened, but we observed things change over the matter of months. And one of the things that we noticed along the river where we were walking is the milkweed pods that changed texture and shape and color. And at first my daughter would want to touch them and had a yearning to break them open and see what was inside. And I remember asking her, let's wait, let's see what happens as the pod grows and changes. And that was the impetus for the book. And it developed over a matter of years, actually. I had that experience. I made some sketches. It sat for a little while. And then I eventually came back to it and decided to make a completed project out of it. That also came back to life, that idea, when I found a piece of writing by a 19th century Swiss philosopher named Henri Frédéric Amiel. And it's a more obscure piece of writing, but it was a diary excerpt. And if I could take a moment to read that to you now, he says, "Let mystery have its place in you. Do not be always turning up your whole soil with the plowshare of self-examination, but leave a little fallow corner in your heart ready for any seeds the winds may bring, and reserve a nook of shadow for the passing bird. Keep a place in your heart for the unexpected guests, an altar for the unknown God. Then if a bird sings among your branches, do not be too eager to tame it." And this got me thinking about the project and the experience with my daughter. I applied for a residency at Maine Media, which is in Rockport, Maine. It was a national competition. It was granted the residency for a 6-week stay at Maine Media. It was incredible. As an artist, they actually paid me to make work, gave me a beautiful spot, and then full access 24/7 to a bookmaking and printmaking studio. And I was there probably 16 hours a day. So when I get really involved in a project, I don't stop. And so this book, throughout those 6 weeks, became a really, for me, a passionate look at the idea of patience and mystery, kind of thinking about the pod, embracing the darkness and the things that are yet to be, and how ideas are conceived and then come to fruition. To read a small excerpt in the book and to explain the visual of it since I can't give it to you right now. I use the words of Emile and I couple that narrative with my own writing. And so I talk about the experience with my daughter and it shifts voices throughout the book. And so it begins like this. The young girl and her mother walked the same route every day. They happened upon purple asters in bloom, rabbit tracks in the mud, and milkweed near the river. The milkweed pods appeared to be holding something within. The girl wanted to break them open. "Wait," her mother said. The mornings grew colder. The pods had changed color and were now rough to the touch. To the girl, it seemed the pods were dying. One day, the girl discovered a pod had cracked open. She reached out to touch what lay inside. The seed slipped through her fingers and floated upwards, landing momentarily in the wisps of her hair. She watched as the seeds drifted over the river and out of sight. And so the coupling of these narratives, along with my own imagery, so I photographed and sketched milkweed pods throughout a couple of months where I was investigating the change of the color and texture and what was happening with them, and turned this into a sculptural artist book. So it's not a traditional codex, but it can actually be held open. And so it expands to about 2 feet wide, 8 inches tall. And the text is slowly revealed throughout the sculpture of the book. I created my images of the milkweed at 3 stages. And so the pod tightly closed, the pod slowly opening. And then finally, if you think about the text of my daughter touching the seeds and having them wisping above her, that final image of the seeds being released. It's an observation of the natural world, but it's also a commentary on how if we pay attention and observe, reflect on our surroundings, but also think about what that means for us as we conceive an idea or a dream, whatever it may be, and how giving that time to happen can produce a wonderful outcome.
That's wonderful. How inspiring. It's about transformation, you know, observational transformation, this kind of Foucauldian like askesis, this work that we do on ourselves to be better than we think we are. The next question that we have on our list is about teaching. And it's so hard, given what you've said to us, to imagine how you could possibly teach these things in one semester. So where do you begin? How do you teach this? And what do you bring into the classroom with you when you talk about observation and creation? And it's this emotional journey, it's a psychological journey, and it's more than that too.
As an artist, I really feel that I may be in my studio, but the moment I step into the classroom, I carry what I make and what I think about, I carry it with me and I bring it to my students. And so I really feel a symbiotic relationship between practice of making art and teaching. And one of the most important parts of my teaching philosophy is what I call visual acuity. So I think of visual acuity in 3 ways. One is immediate, one is internal, and one is external. And so when I teach, visual acuity of this seeing that I really encourage my students to practice, the immediate form of that would be when I set up a still life or I ask students to step outside and draw a landscape. So what is immediately surrounding us and how can we pause our lives to slow down and really observe with fervor this incredible world around us? And the second part is the internal visual acuity. For me, that's about self-reflection, which happened in the work that I was just introducing to you, the walk. How can we really see within ourselves? And for students, that might be sketching or writing notes in their sketchbook. It could be writing an artist statement. It could be really thinking hard about what they're making and why they're making it. Lastly, and maybe the most important for me right now, is visual acuity that's external, meaning for me, observing the world beyond the self. And so while I teach students techniques and learning how to render and draw things in front of them, I also want to talk about how those techniques can be used to express something about the world beyond themselves. That could be how we relate or respond to the world around us in terms of social issues about race, gender, religion. And when I say external, it could be in their immediate community of Bryant. What are they witnessing happening around them? What are they witnessing in our country? What are they witnessing remotely, of course? Her name is Tia Blassingame. She is an assistant professor of book arts and printmaking at Scripps College in California. And she will stream in with my Studies in the Book students and hopefully even an even bigger part of the community of Bryant, if I can make that happen, talk about her work in print and book and how it relates mostly to race and the history and perception of race. As an African-American woman, she has a lot to say about where these things intersect in her work. It's very powerful work. But I think it'll broaden their perspectives. And it'll, first of all, introduce women and artists I think they should know about. In thinking also about my experience in art history, where I learned a lot about a lot of white males, European males, I think it's important to introduce new perspectives. And so hopefully this guest artist experience for them will broaden their horizons, help to see the world through a new lens, and to discover the possibilities and how they could use their seeing and observing in a way that can then affect others. Last semester in my art and design studio course, we ended the semester by talking about Shepherd Fairey, who is an artist that graduated from RISD many years ago and has gone on to create incredible work that's exhibited all over the globe, very graphic style with a lot of print and mixed media that explores really important topics and brings them to light or exposes them in whichever way he chooses to present them. There was a new mural that was created in Providence in the last year. We looked at that artist and then we began an assignment that I called Design with a Message. So the entire semester, we learned about the elements of art and principles of design. So we looked at how artists can use pattern, balance, emphasis, contrast, unity. We practiced those techniques, but then we really put it to work and kind of put it to action through this last assignment. And I was amazed at the students' reactions to this assignment. Many felt that they never had an opportunity to express those kinds of views at Bryant. And so it ended up being very powerful for the students and for me. And the topics that they covered were quite varied. So I had students who were talking about immigration policies. I had students who were talking about race and how it has affected them personally. So very provocative work, even though the students, many students had little art experience beforehand, had nothing to do with it. They were tapping into a part of themselves and thinking about how they felt about issues. And this chance to express that left a really incredible effect on all of us.
It's quite inspiring. In the context of working with your students, what are some of the experiences or lessons or opportunities or mediums that they respond to with the most energy?
Well, I think learning to see is a really challenging task, to really slow down, to turn off your phone, and to look at something so carefully is difficult. But I think going through the process and the reward that can happen when you are able to convey what you see, and often that carries, even though we're drawing something more representationally from life, there is some self-esteem that comes from that in really learning a new skill, learning to observe more carefully, and then in the end, creating something from scratch. And it can be a very powerful thing for students. We work in lots of different mediums. I teach two different drawing studios each semester. We work with pencil, with charcoal, with ink. But most importantly, I offer a wide number of assignments that hopefully will capture their attention. And so we may be drawing from a vase of flowers. I may set up a themed still life in front of the class. During the quarantine, so immediately after spring break, students had to work from home. And I decided to have them focus on home for the duration of that time. So they had to walk in around the block or in their yard, and they had to find natural objects that they could draw from. They had to do some research on the wildlife in their own communities and think about that and draw from it. Probably the most important aspect of teaching during that quarantine online was thinking about what home meant to them, since that's the only place they could be. I asked them to gather objects and arrange a still life about the theme of home and what that embodied for them. And I had students who put together their fishing gear for them. Fishing, that meant home to them, and that's what they drew. I had another student set up a still life with old albums and a record player, and that for her meant home. Another student who was from Jamaica set up a number of objects that related to not only his home, but his heritage. And lastly, a student who collected cows her entire life. She put all of this together. So the assignments, some of them were really whimsical and fun. Some were serious. It all depended on how they looked at it, but it allowed them to take advantage of their time and being in one place. And again, seeing it through a new lens and the act of gathering things and responding to those things in their own style of a drawing was not only just a drawing of what they were observing, but they were observing a moment in their lives that we will never forget with the pandemic and the quarantine. I have a feeling they could look back at the drawing in 20 years and it will conjure memories of this time and the things that happened. Those are examples of, I think, some powerful experiences in the classroom.
What happens to them after they're created?
I am working with Karen McGuire. She has chosen three of those drawings from students and will be contacting the students to write a brief description of why those drawings represent home to them. She'll be featuring them on the Brian Instagram account. So they'll be out into the world, which is one of the beautiful things about art, right? Is that it's out of the sketchbook that's stored underneath our bed and it's shared with the world.
To talk about how we engage with art and engage with our world and how we share art, could you talk about any artists that you are influenced by and maybe what projects you have coming down the pike?
Absolutely. So a longtime favorite of mine is Georgia O'Keeffe. She's an American artist. Some refer to her as the mother of American modernism. And she's well known for her paintings of enlarged flowers, New York skyscrapers, New Mexico landscape where she lived the later part of her life. And thinking about why I have always loved her work for my adult life, it has to do with how she combines what I talked earlier about visual acuity. So how she really observes her immediate surroundings, whether that was the landscape at Lake George or the bones that she found exploring the New Mexico landscape. She observes them, but she interprets them. And that's what I really want my students to do. Not feel as though they have to mimic exactly what's in front of them, but learn the skills and tap into their own style to interpret in a new way. And I remember learning that when she was in art school, she was very frustrated by the lessons that her teachers gave her, where they'd ask her to copy, do an exact copy or rendering of something from nature. And so the way that she expresses herself through that work has always really impacted me. You know, I remember I was 16 when she died in 1986. And some people remember when important political figures might die in their lifetime, where they were at that time. I remember when Georgia O'Keeffe died. Even though I was 16, I knew about her. She's always been an influence for me because of color she uses, subject matter, and the way she expresses herself. Another artist that has been a very powerful inspiration for me has nothing to do with my work. I mean, you couldn't possibly imagine something further from my work, but I think that's what I really love about art is that I can find inspiration in so many different things. So this woman, her name is Shireen Nashat. She's an Iranian filmmaker. She lives in New York City, and she also does photography as well. Her work centers on a contrast between Islam and the West, and sometimes touches on femininity versus masculinity, and then trying to bridge those gaps between them. And I remember the exhibit where I first saw her work in Quebec a very long time ago. And it's one of the moments I will never forget. Her films were inside of a space where there was a two-screen film installation. And so if you sat in one direction, you could watch one film, and sat in the other direction, you could watch the other. And there were many films that did have to do with this concept of gender roles and in the Muslim society. And one of the films I remember so well from that moment was the film called Turbulent. If you watch the film in one direction, you would see in black and white a man singing a traditional Persian song of romance. And the audience was full with men. Every seat was taken. The other film was a woman who was mostly covered in black, except for parts of her face. Her audience was completely empty. And she sang a song with no words. She sang a song that was a constant flow of sounds, screams, wails. So we could make no sense of it, but it was the most expressive thing you've ever heard, as opposed to the male singer who was very traditional and kind of regulated in what he was singing. Beautiful. But we were left in the end thinking about which impacted us more. For women, singing in public in Iran is against the law. And so with this work, again, even though so different from mine, has had a lasting effect on me.
Thank you for sharing that with us.
You're welcome. I would like to discuss a work in progress as well. And this is titled Cup of Gold. It's a work that began a year ago when I had an artist residency at In Cahoots Residency in Petaluma, California for 2 weeks. Prior to that residency, I had been doing some research on sleep. I was not sleeping well at the time. And I was researching in my sketchbook and writing out information and making drawings about plants and plants that could be used to help induce sleep. When I got to California, I was immediately struck by the fields of California poppies, the bright orange flowers that I'd never seen before. I started to look into the history of the land and the Coast Miwok people and how they had, like so many other Native American tribes across the United States, had looked to the land as a way to cure what was ailing them. And in doing this research, I really found out a lot about the California poppy and how it was used along the coastline by many different people historically for thousands of years. And so I began a poem while I was there, and I'll read that to you now. Generations walked these fields, gathering the fiery flowers in springtime. Leaves to soothe restless sleep, roots to cure toothaches, pollen to paint on bodies, petals to chew for sweetness. Spanish settlers arriving off the coast thought the land was on fire. They called the flower Copa de Oro, and there they foolishly dug for gold. So I began a work that I'm just now completing after a year of process in working with the California poppy, including text and image, and also a visual of the landscape that folds out when the book opens. I'm asking the viewer to consider looking back in order to help us move forward. I'm hoping to finish the project by the end of the summer. The book edition will be an edition of 40. It will include letterpress printing. So I printed from historical wood type for part of this book. It'll include pochoir, which is a traditional French technique of using stencils, and a beautiful handmade paper that's really from Saint Armand paper in Quebec. It's a gorgeous natural green that kind of comments also on the color of the land.
That's fabulous. When did you say it will be complete, you think?
September 2020.
That's fantastic. Well, congratulations, Valerie, on your upcoming project. Thank you for sharing with us today. We really appreciated it. And I personally found it very inspiring.
Thank you very much for having me.
Of course.
Thank you for tuning in for Brian's Faculty Spotlight. This production was made possible through the efforts of the Krupp Library's Collection Management and Digital Services team. In each episode, we explore faculty projects, publications, and personalities. Subscribe to keep track of the work that inspires us to excel. Thank you for tuning in for Brian's Faculty Spotlight. This production was made possible through the efforts of the Krupp Library's Collection Management and Digital Services team. In each episode, we explore faculty projects, publications, and personalities. Subscribe to keep track of the work that inspires us to excel.